Hey, Chad.
Hey, Caitlin.
I am very excited to start this podcast with you.
I know. I'm so excited. Thank you for asking me. It's great. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. And so this is Pour Out Pals.
Yeah. Welcome to the podcast.
Okay. So our podcast has some rules, which I love. If you know me, you know I love some rules. This podcast is to kind of introduce everyone to what we're doing with Pour Out Pals, what the podcast is, kind of how to listen along, and what to expect. Think about our podcast, if you want to, as a game, and this episode is like the rule book, and you can break the rules.
The listener can break the rules. Okay, fantastic.
Yeah. Unless they like someone telling them what to do, in which case you're not allowed to break any of the rules.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. This is a, would you call this an audiobook club, Chad?
I would call this an audiobook club. And there's nothing that thrills me more than an audiobook club. So, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about how I really want to join a book club. And I have just kind of forced you into being a part of my book club.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
The listeners have a little bit more choice in the matter, but you don't.
I do not. I'm so excited for my porridge today. Yeah.
So basically, we have decided to read every single Poirot novel by Agatha Christie, every mystery that includes our favorite Belgian, Hercule Poirot.
Mm-hmm.
Each book will have two episodes. One will be a pre-read episode that kind of prepares you for the book that you're about to read.
The pre-read is the episode with no spoilers.
Yes, that's very important. There are no spoilers. This is assuming you haven't read the book yet, and we will give you kind of like themes to look for. We'll set the scene a little bit. We'll do some research about like where it takes place, what's going on in history at that time. We'll even give you some heads up about if there are like specific beverages in the book. We'll suggest that you have them along with you as you read. So far, every book also has a playlist that we're linking to as well to kind of curate and your reading experience.
They're awesome, by the way. Great job.
They've been really fun. Yeah, they've been fun to make. And like you, I kind of get like a general vibe and then I'll listen to some music that I think might fit. But I do a read test where I'm like, there's too much violin here. It's too loud. I can't focus. Yep. You know, I'll try to do the ones that are very like atmospheric.
I keep going back to the Knives Out soundtrack.
Ooh, that makes sense. Yeah. The way we envision it again. You're your own person. You can do what you want. The way we envision it is you will, before you read, kind of get ready to read it by listening to the pre-read. And then we'll have kind of a debrief episode afterwards, which is full of spoilers, where we talk about the plot. We kind of discuss our impressions. We'll give you even a little bit more kind of background on anything that you may have skipped over or things like that. And so it'll be a nice kind of like processing the book.
Yeah, the way I look at the debriefing one, which is it's a great term for it, is, and I think I'm right about this, maybe I'm not, and if I am, just tell me. But like at the beginning of the debriefing episodes, usually I give a very brief summary of what happens in the book until things get impossible to explain. And then the rest of the podcast is kind of us on the fly figuring out a synopsis for the entire, the rest of the book. And it's really, really fun.
Yeah. And we definitely kind of want to figure out a way to like involve our listeners as well. You know, so if you want to email in your thoughts or give us a voice recording, we can kind of put something together and have like maybe a third type of episode that gets everyone who's listening involved in it as well.
Yeah, definitely. We have a Gmail address, which is going to be in the show notes. It's poirotpals@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Very easy to remember if you're a fan of the Belgian detective.
That's kind of the rules or the structure that we've come up with. We'll read them in order as best we can. We're going to break our rules right away pretty soon. And we'll tell you guys more about that in the next episode. But we are going to start off with The Mysterious Affair at Styles. So that will be the next episode on your feed. And so just if you do, if you are wanting to kind of read along with us and avoid spoilers, just kind of keep in mind that if your podcast like app or whatever plays the next episode automatically, just kind of make sure that you're ready to like turn off the podcast once you've once you've listened to it.
Yeah, because in the debriefing episodes, the second episode in each pair, the spoilers come fast and they come furiously. Yeah.
So, yes. Yeah, so it's our version of Fast and Furious.
Yeah, it is. It is. I was also going to say, would you say that, like, because you were just talking about how, like, we've got this podcast and here are the rules. And then when we start talking about the chronology that we're reading them in, immediately we break it. So I know. What I would say is, like, would you agree that we are both people who really like rules, but we're also rebels?
I would agree.
Okay, good.
Yes. Good. I would agree 100%. And okay. I have to clarify, I like making the rules. I do not like following the rules. If somebody gives me rules, I just walk out of the room.
Sure. That's
so.
Well, yep. This is going to be great.
Yeah. We're making this with people like me in mind. So you can do what you want. This is how we've set it up. Enjoy as you desire. But yeah, I think is there anything else we need to tell listeners about, like, kind of how to prepare, what to expect?
No, I think that's okay. I think that's pretty good. Ideally speaking, you'll get interested in the book that we're talking about in the first episode, yeah. And then before you listen to the second episode, you will have read the book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so I have this question in my show notes that says, "Why are we doing this?" And I thought, even if we don't have an answer, we could give our best guesses.
Would you like me to go first or would you like to go first?
I want you to go first.
I have been, okay, so this is tying into 9 million things, but
yeah.
You and I have known each other for a really long time. Not a really, but we have actually.
Yeah,
kind of now. And we have, I believe, seen each other in the same room twice.
Yes.
Our entire relationship is built on podcasting and creativity, but via the internet.
Yeah.
And so I record a lot of podcasts, most of them improv comedy podcasts, but that entails a lot of scheduling with people who are super, super busy. And it's very hard to get anything done on a regular basis. And that's fine. That's amazing, but I'm lucky to work with the people I do. But when you approached me with this concept, I was like, I bet you we could do this month to month. I bet you we could do it. And it also gives us a chance to work together regularly, which is great because I really like working with you. And the other thing is that Agatha Christie is someone who I read a bunch of her books when I was very young. Like I started reading Stephen King and Agatha Christie books when I was a kid. And then I just kind of didn't.
Yeah.
And then as I got older, I started to realize that I was fascinated by the Masterpiece Mysteries.
Oh,
The Poirot ones. And just, I thought they were amazing. And then also the older movies and the Kenneth Branagh movies. And then, so like, it was just this weird thing. All of that was kind of happening. And then you were like, what if we did a podcast? I was like, yes. Okay. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it. Yeah. How about you, Caitlin?
Yeah. I mean, it was so sweet the way like we had started talking about this podcast. You were like, well, you know, I'm reading this book that's kind of out of order. I think you're reading like her fourth book. You're like, what if we just like set aside some time and talk about it? And I was like, or we record 66 episodes with some bonus content and we read all of the books. So, and I'm so grateful you said yes.
This is amazing.
I think like the reason why we're here together is I think we both found that we had a shared kind of love of Poirot, just kind of casually. And I have been really like seeking out someone to talk to about it and be excited about it.
Cool.
So when you were reading it too, I think I was like, this is my chance. We can talk about Poirot together.
Yes.
And in a structured manner. and I can force you to do a lot of work, and there will be a calendar with a checklist. But but for me personally, I actually didn't get it. I've been an avid mystery fan, I think, my whole life. Like, was raised on the Nancy Drew books. I had every single one of them. The first story I ever wrote was Nancy Drew fan fiction.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Yes.
Is that going to be something that we read for the podcast?
I hope maybe? So. If I can find it. So I think I've always, and I think because of that, because of like it's linked to my childhood, mysteries to me are so comforting. There is something so incredibly soothing about a mystery, particularly kind of that Agatha Christie. I don't know if I'd call her a cozy mystery, maybe, but it's a balm to me. And so during the pandemic, I was listening to Phoebe Reads a Mystery, where Phoebe Judge for free reads a chapter, I think a day, right?
Yeah.
Of a mystery. And so Mysterious Affair at Styles was there, and I listened to it, and I was just hooked. And so then I started seeking out my own. And so primarily I've read, and I got by hooked, that's maybe an understatement. I think I've listened to all the Poirot books, or most of them, twice.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
I go through them pretty quickly.
Can you explain to me how you do that? Is there a Caitlin Morris process for like,
yes,
I'm listening to this and I'm going to get done with it? Because I also, I'm listening to a couple of audiobooks now and it's taking me, I don't have a rhythm for it. So like, how do you do it?
Well, I think some of it is that I work from home and okay. I'll like be doing chores throughout the day. And it's kind of my companion when I'm just doing stuff around the house. You know, like some cool. people would do podcasts. So it's like folding laundry, doing dishes, making dinner. Right. And I think also some of it is that I have a really loud cat. And so to survive in my household, I have to wear noise-canceling headphones.
That is amazing. Okay.
For my sanity. I don't know what I'm doing painting myself as like someone with a crazy cat who reads a lot of mysteries, but those are the facts. Something that I've really enjoyed is getting the chance to slow down and read the books, because I'm a reader too. I have like very specific, like I love listening to a series. I don't mind a boring series because I use it to fall asleep as well. So like kind of the longer, the more series, the better for listening to audiobooks, but like I also do read as well. And so it's been exciting to slow down and take notes and like really think about things and also not have the speed that an audiobook creates. Like you can just kind of breeze along really boring parts of books.
Oh, wow.
With an audiobook, because the narrator is there just kind of moving you along. And when you're on your own, you kind of feel the pace more and you have to commit to it. And I mean, with some of the first books that you and I have read, there were moments where I was like, I am struggling to get through this because I'm frustrated by X, Y, and Z. So it's just a totally different reading experience.
I feel the same way. I don't listen to a lot of audiobooks, but I listen to way too many podcasts. Like,
yeah.
if you and I are living the same lives in different cities, imagine me cleaning the house and doing stuff, but I'm always listening to like Comedy Bang Bang or something like that. Like, that's pretty much what I do. But you're right. Yeah. Sitting down to read these books, there have been times where I'm like, this cannot be important to the story. Like, this cannot be. And I just love it though, because you can't not finish these books. Mm-hmm. It's actually impossible, like to even get angry at them and to put them down and to go, no, that was a bad plot point. And then the next day I'm like, I need to know what happened. I need to know.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, like we kind of talk on later episodes about like how some of these were serialized as well, you know? And so the pacing in a way is really different. Like there are these like chunks of the book. And so that's also kind of interesting too, to have kind of have that like starting and stopping that the audience might actually have experienced.
So when you say serialized, do you mean like the stories would come out once every weekend, like a Sunday paper?
I think so. I think some of them were. Yeah. I'll double check. But I think Styles might have been serial and Links, but I'll check.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm also curious for you too about like why Poirot. You know, we could do Marple or the other ones. What draws you to Poirot?
That's a great, great question. I think there is something, and this might be way too deep an answer. So if my psychologist is listening to this, take notes. I feel like there is something about his specific type of masculinity that I am drawn to, because there's no one, I've never known anyone like that in my life. Like someone who is just innately good at things to a certain extent is kind of like kind of playing with people sometimes, but is putting everything together, has a sense of humor, but also like extremely dramatic. There's just something about that personality. Whereas like Sherlock Holmes is just a dick. And so it's like, I, you know, 2023. But yeah, I read a lot of Sherlock Holmes and I was like, this is not an interesting person to me. But whereas the character of Poirot, because of his idiosyncrasies and his just the way he plays with people and the way that he can also be a real jerk, but there's a certain type of thing that I admire about him, I guess, which is strange to say. That's a great question, Caitlin. Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah. No, but I was thinking about this as we were like kind of thinking about this episode and kind of, I hadn't really stopped to ask myself like, wait, but why are we doing this?
Yeah.
I think especially Poirot for me, he is a constant. I think that's something that like when I talk about mysteries as being soothing, you know, we'll talk a little bit later about like how Agatha Christie, she kind of saw Poirot as like, I will write Poirot so I can write my other books.
Okay.
He was kind of, yeah.
So he's like Ocean's 11 is to Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah.
Like you,
yeah.
Right. Okay. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
He's like, she's like, I'll do it. Like people love it. Do I love it? Maybe not. But there is something to me like so comforting about somebody who is so consistently themselves throughout all these novels.
Right.
It's something that I don't mind returning to. And I think that something that really draws me is, and like Agatha Christie has been really noted for this, you know, despite some of her drawbacks with like writing about different things in her time period, she really looks at like the value of an outsider and the value of like an outside perspective. Like Poirot, he's, you know, he uses his like quote unquote foreignness and people's assumptions about him because of that to his advantage. And I like that. Like he's like, I'll take your xenophobia and I'll raise you as I solve this mystery.
Right. That's a great way of saying it.
Yeah. And like, he's also, I'm like, okay, this is a bit of a therapy session suddenly, but like, he is unashamed about his quirks and his quirks are his strengths. And many people underestimate him because of how he presents. Again, there's that like awareness. He's reading everyone. He doesn't care. And he's also using all of their assumptions to play them. And I love that. And actually, I mean, and you could argue too that Miss Marple is doing that with age, I think, which is why I like her too.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, people are like, oh, it's a little old lady. And she's like, I'm really smart. I think that is one of the things that draws me to Agatha Christie, but I think also like everyone, no matter how confident they are, probably has a little bit of that like outsider feeling. And so maybe that's why people are drawn to Poirot, is because there's something maybe not relatable, because I don't think I relate to his mustache or his hair or his like, yeah, his love of neatness, but like that ability to take a perceived weakness and turn it into your greatest asset, I think is like very alluring.
I think we're very similar with that. I think it's just that you are much better at explaining it than I am.
No.
So that was, that was very, very good. No, you're, yeah, that's exactly right. Like there is something comforting about it too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that he solves it. And I think also too, like, I don't think it's a mistake that I became kind of obsessed / reliant on it during the pandemic when there was like so much uncertainty that I was like, every 6 hours, a mystery will be solved. and order will be brought to the universe. Right. And so I still feel that way to a degree. And I think maybe there's like, okay, we could go on for this for a while with this. But I think there's also something about like uncovering the truth that's really satisfying. And then like people believing it. I mean, sometimes they don't, but like at the end of the day, it's about, it's like, and even Poirot will say this sometimes, he's like, do you want justice or do you want the truth? Which I love.
Right.
And so like, I am also really drawn to a world in which that someone, some kind of hero is taking that seriously and cares about it so much.
I also think that there is something to the fact that he understands that if you get to the truth, you can't really control it afterwards. Like once it's found out and we know exactly what happened, it's not up to him to decide the next steps, exactly. Which is really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we get like, you know, Hastings is all about morality as he sees it. And that can be, especially like, you know, looking at it in 2023, like his morality as he sees it isn't always the way we would. So there's something refreshingly objective about Poirot too. It's also just fun. It's so fun. It's fun to read and it's fun to talk to you about it. And it's fun to make our playlists and to think about our little writing habit or our little reading habitats.
That's exactly right.
As we do this.
But I've already switched. In one of the episodes coming up, you'll hear me talking about, like, in detail about how I
read. In great detail.
Yeah, the Mysterious Affair at Stiles. And now that we're on, like, a separate book, we're recording this a couple months later, I have completely changed, and now I'm taking notes in the books.
Ooh, I've converted you.
Yeah, you totally did, because I was like, there's so much that I have to write. There's no chance that I can keep this in my brain. And then I just have to like circle stuff and be like, what? And then go back and fill it in. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's fun kind of like reading it with an audience or a conversation in mind afterwards too. Like, I want to bring this up. I want to talk about this more. I think maybe that's also like, I'm in a phase in my life where I'm trying to, again, I work from home, so there's a lot of alone time. But I'm like, can I find people who are excited about the same things I am? And can we just talk about it? And maybe that is really important in life.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Ultimately, we're having fun and we hope that we can like provide you all who are listening to this with some fun as well, because I think we all need that. We're about to get into one of my favorite parts, which is a little bit of context. Mm-hmm. To kind of even prepare you for the journey ahead, whether it's the next episode or whether you want to follow along with us through everything. I thought I'd just kind of give a little context about like briefly who Agatha Christie is and kind of the magnitude of her presence in the earth and kind of in the ether in terms of her readers. We'll go back in time. Agatha Christie was born in 1890 in Devon, in England, and that setting appears a lot in her books. So we'll kind of go back to that. But she likes to set her mysteries kind of in that area. Over her lifetime, she wrote 102 books, which is so impressive. Yeah, I think she lived until she was 80. So that's a lot.
She started when she was 1 year old, though, right?
Yeah, so it's, like, exactly. She, right, yeah, in the womb. Right. yeah, and it's kind of cool. Like, I was reading some interviews with her. I didn't pull any quotes for this, but she would talk about how she was constantly, you know, even as a young girl, like, making things up in her head and making up little dramas and kind of almost, like, play-acting them. And so she was like, when I got a pen and paper, it was just that kind of on the page and I could play around and like I had so much freedom. And so I think that's kind of cool too. Like, I guess she was kind of homeschooled and isolated a little bit and like didn't have a lot of friends. I think that she probably had to create a lot of her own fun. And I mean, honestly, I'm glad whatever happened happened because we get all of her books. But yeah, she wrote 102 books over her lifetime. 66 of those were detective novels, and 33 of those are the Poirot novels that we are embarking upon together. She's a household name, but she's the most translated author of all time.
Wow.
And she's also the best-selling author of all time.
Yeah, I heard that too. I was like, that's amazing. I mean, there's just not that many people in Britain.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, it's got to be the rest of the world that is buying these books. That's bananas. That's wow.
Yeah. So there's something, you know, we were kind of talking about like the universalness of Poirot and kind of her books. There's something she's tapping into. You know, I think we all need it for different reasons. You know, and not to mention The Mousetrap, her play has the record for like the longest consecutive run in England, I think, of theater productions. So she just has, she's very like superlative. And
was that the only, I think that was the only play she wrote.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like one for one, huh?
Uh-huh, exactly. And she's just very impressive. And I think that, you know, she can kind of just like be name dropped as like, oh, one of these whodunit authors. But it's like, no, she's had like this kind of profound impact on what our world looks like and thinks like, and then kind of all the stories and media and entertainment and books that have followed. Like, she's really established a lot. Maybe that's something we'll also kind of go into as well, is like what the kind of messages are that we're getting from her books. You and I kind of talk about that, like some of the gender dynamics and just kind of worldviews that they put forward, you know, and some of them are kind of questionable now too, you know, like she's not perfect to any degree. Yeah. And we want to hold her accountable for that and not like brush over it.
Definitely. Yeah. And a lot of the books, the versions that I'm reading, it's always so funny when we start a new book and I'm always getting the latest version of it. And I guess some of those, these new ones have had a little bit of the copy changed to get rid of certain words that were just unacceptable.
Yeah.
It's always so funny because you'll send me like a message and like the one that you're, the book you've got is like, it seems like it literally like you flew to London and bought it at a used bookstore or something. And it's like always got the coolest cover and all this other stuff. And I'm wondering if we are having different experiences.
Probably. Yeah. Honestly, the last one I read, it's comical and we can put like a picture of it on social media. But I think because like, some of her books are, what is that? Like, their copyrights don't exist anymore because they're of a certain age. Anybody can produce them. And mine looked like a back alley. Somebody in their basement just like printed it. And it's like a comically bad print. And I got it for
$6. There you go. That's so great.
But I did get my Styles one. It was like a gorgeous new printing of it that has art. And I'll actually maybe even like flip through it on social media. That might be a nice one. But it's beautiful. It's like a celebration of what a book is. It's a piece of art. Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. And I think it's like a series that I think one publisher does. And it's worth it if there are some books in that series that you like. It's a beautiful copy of it. But I have... for the next one we're reading, I have just the regular paperback. So I think basically I'm all over the place.
Okay.
Yeah, but there are definitely different versions. And that's interesting too, you know, when people are talking about like, don't take away these things. I don't know. I don't know where I stand. Like, because reading these were very pleasant. You know, there were some things where we were like, oh no. But I don't know how much of that is already curated and how I'd feel if we did have the original, you know? So I don't know. I don't know where I stand.
Yeah.
Big question mark.
We could hopefully figure it out over the 33 books.
Yeah. Maybe. We'll just keep checking in with each other. And I like that we have all this time to have like these perennial questions. But something to kind of keep an eye on as you read all of her books is that like she basically created and kind of established and solidified, like there'd been versions of it before, but she kind of honed in on and just built that classic mystery whodunit plot that we live and breathe by now, if you read any mystery. So like structurally looking at the book, it's worth it to kind of know what it is so you can kind of see it as you read. But basically you get a series of suspects. All of them are hiding secrets, whether it's murder or not. You get a person, or in the case of Poirot, a detective trying to figure it out. There's a series of clues, red herrings, and twists that Chad will try to summarize. operative word is try. Meanwhile, the detective is kind of whittling away at the truth, kind of checking suspects off the list. In the end, all of the suspects gather together. The culprit is revealed, but even in that gathering, there are usually a few fake outs of like, who is going to be the one? And in the end, all is revealed. And I'd say, yeah, that's kind of the structure. Am I missing anything?
Of the books that I've read, that is very consistent, no matter who the narrator is.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned the narrator, because something that's fun and exciting about them is that we switch narration styles throughout. The first couple of books, we get Hastings, Poirot's kind of longtime friend who he met in Belgium during the war. And so we get Hastings kind of taking on like a Watson role. Mm-hmm. But that really changes and we get other people. And sometimes in some Poirot books, he doesn't enter until like the last third. And we get this whole other narrative about these other people, whether it's first person or third person. So even though like Poirot is consistent, she does riff a little bit or kind of just experiment with like perspective in her books, which is kind of exciting.
The Hastings stuff I find fascinating because the Watson comparison totally makes sense. One of my things that I love about Agatha Christie, though, is she, at least so far, throughout those first two books, mm-hmm. she hasn't done the thing that Watson got to do, which is like, it's basically like almost like a meta situation that Arthur mm-hmm. Conan Doyle was doing with Watson, which is like, you're reading the thing that, you know, like Watson becomes kind of a well-known writer.
Yeah.
But that's, and what I love about Agatha Christie is that Hastings is just writing these books for us. Like,
yeah,
that's it. Like, we're seeing these books, all these first two books, because he just wants to tell us what happened over 220 pages. And I love that there's no explanation. There's no getting into it. It's just like, this is great. I love
think
that.
Like the first page of Styles, he's like, the family wanted me to write this account. And that's maybe the one thing.
Right.
And somehow he's attached to Poirot's fame, but yeah, it's all a mystery.
Yep. A lot of time in Argentina. Yeah. It's just great. It's great.
So I thought like we could kind of last thing, just like introduce the readers to Poirot a little bit.
Great.
So he is a retired Belgian police officer turned into a detective kind of over time. He will start out as kind of more of like, what would you say, like a detective's detective? He's kind of like an industry famous.
Yeah.
And then very rapidly, which is something we'll probably address when we get to Aykroyd, suddenly he's very famous and has had this big, long career and everybody knows about him. But we kind of skip over that. Interestingly, I found out that Agatha Christie was considering other types of detectives, like kind of who would be her character to solve the Styles affair. And some of the runners up were a scientist and a schoolboy.
Ooh. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Those would be very different.
I'm very glad that she decided on the Belgian detective. Yes.
Exactly. And so I thought I'd just read the first little description that we get of Poirot in Mysterious Affair, because it kind of just really sets up who he is. And he kind of just like spirals out after that. Like a lot of Poirot that we know and all of his quirks and mannerisms are really established in Affair at Styles like right away. But here we go. He was hardly more than 5'4", but carried himself with great dignity. His head was exactly the shape of an egg, and he always perched it a little on one side. The neatness of his attire was almost incredible. I believe a speck of dust would have caused him more pain than a bullet wound.
That's awesome.
So that's our little guy. Yeah. He loves symmetry and reason, but also psychology. And he kind of uses his desire for neatness, reason, and psychology to kind of solve his crimes. His age is a mystery to us, and we try to tackle that throughout the next couple episodes. I kind of have started thinking of him as like in the world of the Poirot books, very much like in the Lord of the Rings, everyone's lifespans are a little different. And Poirot's more like an elf and everyone else is a mere human. We're like, maybe he's just on a different aging timeline.
That is a great way of thinking of it. It is. The other thing too, and I don't want to digress too much, but in the second book, Murder on the Lynx, Poirot is already the established, I think, well-known detective. And then this younger detective who works, who's very famous in France, regards him as like an old guy that time has passed by. And yeah. This is the second book. So it is this, there's no like sort of like, it's not a situation where it's like, here's Poirot, mm-hmm. and this is his first case. He's always talking about all these other cases he's done. They sometimes inform cases yeah. we don't know about, sometimes inform yeah. what we're reading. You could not imagine the universe that is created in these
yeah.
first few
yeah,
books.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting. He's always old. But also something that I love, too, about these books, it's been really fun to do in the research side, like providing everyone the pre-read kind of background, is Poirot also is kind of the story of the 20th century. He starts off with World War I, and then his mysteries end, I think, in 1970. So something that's fascinating wow. is that, like, he gets to encounter, like, the hippie movement and, like, right. the counterculture movement and, like, the Beatles. And he's mm-hmm. not pleased.
No, he is not.
So we get all this like generational commentary and like this kind of tension between these ages and kind of the different generations that are processing the 20th century in a way that's really fascinating. Although by the end, there is a scene in the second to last or the third to last book where a girl looks at him and screams, "You're so old," and runs out of the room. Wow, how old did he have to be? So yeah, lastly, he loves sweet drinks. We're going to research those sweet drinks for you. Hopefully, depending on how committed we are, maybe create some recipes for you to make on your own.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and like I said before, like Agatha Christie famously was like really sick of Poirot by the end. And she didn't like his personality. And she felt like constricted by him and kind of begrudgingly kept pumping out these Poirot books. And it's kind of interesting to read them with that in mind, too, that like she's almost like subverting the constrictions of her own fame.
Wow.
You know, she's like, OK, here's my constraint. It's Poirot. How can I do whatever I want with this guy still here?
Right. And I think there's also, and I won't get into the exact book, but it's a little bit sometimes like she's punishing the reader for picking Poirot. There's a little bit of a yeah. thing where she just sometimes repeats things and it's like, okay, like we got it. You know, we got it, Agatha Christie. You're a lot smarter than I am.
Yeah.
But it's there. And it's just this very much this feeling yeah. too, which I find to be fascinating that you can feel that in the writing.
Like, how dare you pick up this book? Yeah. Yeah. And so kind of along too, we're going to like track her life, what's going on. We'll get to learn all about her travels around the world and kind of just the moments in her life that influence the books too. I think that's it for what we'd plan on like preparing the reader for. Do you have any like kind of last words before we like send people off to listen to our next episode?
It's very important that Caitlin has made these rules. It's very, very important. The other thing that will be happening is that when it comes to extras, like the things about the, you know, the sweet drinks yeah. and the playlist and things, like these will be ever morphing, ever changing into different things yeah. and stuff. We have 33 books.
This is where we're starting. These are our yep, ideas now.
Exactly. And I'm so, so glad you asked me to do this, Caitlin.
Yeah. And I'm really glad you said yes. So yeah, thank you. And I'm excited to see what happens.
Enjoy the first book.
I know. Yeah. Enjoy Mysterious Affair.